Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show, Jay Dyer. Jay is a public speaker, lecturer, comedian, and author of the popular titles Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film, which made it to Amazon's number one spot in the first month of release in the Film and Hollywood category, and Esoteric Hollywood 2. He has appeared on numerous nationally syndicated radio and television shows, and he is the co-host and co-creator with Jay Widener of the TV show Hollywood Decoded on Gaia TV. Jay, welcome back. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me back. It's good to be here. How are you?
I'm good. And thanks for coming back. I've been looking forward to this. I've always been a fan of cinema and TV shows. And of course, as I've gotten older and started looking into things, you get to realize, you know, Hollywood media is used as a tool for brainwashing, indoctrination, culture creation, but it's also really entertaining. What got you started down this? What got you started down your path here?
I started when I was in college. I think, yeah, we talked about that last time. I always liked movies, but I realized that I wasn't going to be a movie star probably. So I thought maybe I could try comedy. And then I realized that comedy and movies and all that entertainment stuff requires quite a bit of compromise, I think, human compromise, that kind of stuff, to get to where you're successful. Not everybody, but maybe in many cases, especially the A-list level or whatever. So I decided to look at movies from more of a philosophical standpoint. So when I went to college, I studied philosophy, studied intelligence operations in terms of Ian Fleming and James Bond and all that in my grad school period. And so I always was trying to tie things back into movies. So I always wanted to do film, always wanted to be in movies. So that's the root of how I got started, and then I just continued with that all throughout college, and then after college just been blogging, and here I am.
Very good. It seems like the more time that passes in film, I see more occult symbolism. I see more of the transhumanism agenda. It seems like it's kind of taken over everything. And Netflix, with it being the monster that it is now, everything that I'm flipping through, it's either robots, transhumanism, occult, witchcraft. Do you see these same trends going on right now?
Yeah, I can't believe how open it is. Like, I remember, you know, 10 years ago when I would study this kind of stuff, I thought it would be crazy to talk about, say, the relationship between the CIA and Hollywood. And I was just 10 years ago starting to stumble on those connections and kind of blog about it from more of an academic standpoint, not just theories, but actually, you know, reading a few of the works that were out at that time that covered it. And I noticed a lot of the occult stuff too. I'd read a lot of books on cults in my 20s and New Age cults and that kind of stuff. And so you start to notice that stuff in film, and I realized that, well, they're subtly kind of throwing in, you know, square and compass and this kind of stuff, all kinds of Masonic imagery in movies. But what's really blown me away is the outright sort of the satanic type stuff that's come out, like you said, the witchcraft stuff especially. in the last few years, you know, with Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, it's gone from this goofy Melissa Joan Hart thing in the 90s to being like hardcore, you know, straight up satanic type stuff. And I think that's absolutely on purpose. It's totally an agenda. And it has to do, I believe, with, from the esoteric perspective, the idea that we're entering into a new aeon, a new age of the revelation of the method of all things being the esoteric is becoming exoteric, basically.
And part of this agenda, it seems like, in a way, they're reversing the roles of men and women, or trying to just make men more feminine, right, and just get rid of gender altogether, it seems.
The Baphomet image, I think, is part of that, because it has both genders. And the idea is that there's, in ancient Hermeticism and even in Greek philosophers, there's the idea that the original unity was above division, above genders. And so the assumption is that there's some kind of higher state that you can attain to if you can transcend male or female, these either ors. So the occult tradition, or many of the occult traditions, the Western occult tradition, Hermetic tradition, it goes back to this idea, and it wants to achieve a kind of transcendence through the alchemical process. And part of the alchemical process is breaking things down in order to build it back up and to merge it. So I think that the overall alchemy, to tie this to transhumanism, which is the great work, is to transcend those dualities and those distinctions, which I don't think dualities and distinctions are necessarily a bad thing. They can be good. They're there for a reason. And we're not going to achieve some kind of super transcendence by melding everybody into a giant blob. I just did an analysis of the movie The Blob from 1988, and it made me think of this, that like that in a way, this is kind of what The Blob was talking about. Because if you remember in the movie, it's a goofy B movie, but it has a point that speaks to what you're getting at, which is that it's not this thing or that thing, male or female. It's just a blob, and it consumes. It just absorbs you into it. And it made me think not just of the removal of all distinctions, but like the whole idea of the global brain and transhumanism, that the idea that we're all going to just kind of merge into this global consciousness. That's what it's all about.
Now, you were talking about the new era that they're trying to usher in. Talk a little bit more about that. What is this new era? I know that, you know, we're supposed to be entering into, I guess it's an age of Aquarius, where we're leaving a certain age and entering into a more enlightened age. Is that sort of the thing that they're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of differs depending on what esoteric showman is making his predictions. But I mean, sometimes it has to do with, they think that, oh, it's going to be a new aeon of advancing into the trans state, like transcending, like we're talking about any distinctions. And so that's, for some people, it's like, you know, technological transhumanism emerging with the AI. For some people, it's the idea of a return to the crown and conquering child of the Krolian aeon. For some people, the idea is that we're growing out of the older religious conceptions of the last 2,000 years. And so they look at it like the ancient Hindus looked at what they called yugas, which a yuga is like a big, long span of time, like thousands of years. So the idea being that we're passing out of the yuga, the age of Christianity and like the dominance of masculinity, and we're moving into something feminine, the goddess, or something that transcends, or what. It just depends. It differs, you know, depending on which weirdo you read, but that's the idea here, is that passing through these giant aeons, and the idea being that there's different spirits or different ideas or principles that govern the different aeons. So like you said, Aquarius, we're passing out of Pisces and into an Aquarian aeon. And this goes back to like the 60s and, you know, all the goofus bands in the 60s that were promoting the age of Aquarius and whatnot. But I mean, they're kind of, that's all silly stuff, but what's interesting is that under the veil of all that 60s hippie counterculture stuff, actually there was a pretty blatant Luciferian agenda, especially if you look at somebody like Tim Leary. Leary was a devotee of Crowley, and Leary was very clear that he was interested in initiating this new aeon in a very Crowleyan way, which would be aided in his case by the CIA. He was very open about that. He said, there's a clip of him on YouTube that you should look up. You haven't seen it. Anyway, he's out there and he's like, yeah, he says, you can thank the CIA for the whole 60s counterculture.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to talk about that too. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about the satanic and witchcraft aspect of it. What are they trying to get across with this? I mean, are they trying to get us accustomed to witchcraft and Satanism? Are they trying to indoctrinate us that? What do you think's going on there?
I think there's multiple layers and levels of stuff going on with that. So it's not all one thing per se. I mean, overall in the big spectrum, I think it's a negative thing, but I think the CIA, for example, has used a lot of different cults. They've infiltrated a lot of different cults over the years. And so there's an aspect to which it's a culture creation, and altering the culture can utilize all different kinds of things. So it's not just altering the culture with, the 60s stuff. You could look at the satanic stuff as kind of like the later phases of the 60s counterculture stuff. People in the 60s weren't ready for, you know, outright Satanism. They were more accustomed to kind of the hippie, you know, stages of stuff. And then the more inner core teachings of it, I think, get revealed over time, and it becomes darker and darker and darker. And we see like more and more nihilism, more and more self-destructive attitudes and whatnot. So I think that that's revealing, because as degraded as things get, that's when we start to see these more and more openly debased and degenerate types of things being promoted openly. And I think it's all by design. So there's a lot of different aspects and layers to it. I think that it appeals to a lot of people who are alienated and maybe feel disenfranchised and lack power. So they feel like they can attain power through these kind of alternate means and modus operandi. And really what happens is that a lot of people are being used. So they're kind of being used in these different groups. And a lot of those groups, especially a lot of the occult groups, for example, they have a lot of like military intelligence connections. A lot of military intelligence people are oftentimes involved in these kind of darker cults. And that's kind of probably who's in the background of a lot of this dark cult stuff. And so they're being used and they don't even realize it. And that's kind of the unfortunate part. So, and I think there is a spiritual element to it too. I'm not trying to say it's all just like military intelligence people, but there's different layers and levels to it. But ultimately it is spiritual.
Yeah. And I want to get into that too. The fact that the CIA is heavily influencing Hollywood, the Pentagon, the military industrial complex, also the mafia. We've got all these different angles in influencing Hollywood.
Right.
The CIA, has that been since the onset of, you know, Hollywood, basically, that they've, I mean, the onset of the CIA since that they've been doing this?
Well, I think that prior to in the early 40s, you know, there were movies that were already kind of hinting at the existence of the OSS. Hitchcock films would talk about it. Notorious mentions the OSS. One of the first mentions of the CIA is the Hitchcock North by Northwest, where Cary Grant's character accidentally finds himself tied up in this CIA operation. And it's pretty fairly accurate, because Hitchcock pictures the CIA as like a bunch of academics. And that's really where the CIA came from, was it was people at the academic level that were recruited, called the Inquiry. Prior to the OSS, there was an intelligence apparatus, but typically it was more connected with the military. And then in 1942, you have the creation of the OSS, and then later that becomes the CIA. And the OSS was basically set up by a bunch of British intelligence people. So people from Canada, William Stevenson, people from England, like Ian Fleming, British intelligence, Noel Coward, these kind of people, they came over and they helped Bill Donovan set up the OSS. If you want to watch a movie that actually touches on that, watch The Good Shepherd. It's somewhat accurate. It's Hollywood, obviously, but it kind of shows the process of how this happened. If you remember, the Matt Damon character goes to England and he meets with some people in a bookstore, and They're like, yeah, we're going to set you up and blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of roughly what's going on with Bill Donovan, is that you have these British intelligence people who come and help set up the OSS. And part of the reason for that was that they were wanting to get the U.S. into World War II. So that's part of the reason they were so interested in that, was making sure that the U.S. was on the side of the Allies and ready to go to war and no longer kind of staying out of European wars. So in that sense, yes, the intelligence agencies and apparatchiks or whatever, they were always interested in film from the beginning of the creation of the camera, but it was more so like military propaganda prior to the CIA. So a lot of, military type stuff.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Would utilize actors and actresses and film footage, film reels for propaganda. And then when you get the creation of the intelligence agencies, it's quite natural that there would be a close affinity to this giant sort of churning out propaganda machine known as Hollywood.
And also there's a lot of MK Ultra ties to it. A lot of mind control aspects. You see the involvement of psychedelics and all this culture creation. Talk a little bit about how all that was involved.
Well, one of the things I discovered in the second book, part two, I start out talking about that very thing. I talk about how a lot of the Hollywood crowd was actually doing the premier avant-garde drugs before the people in the 60s counterculture were. So, for example, Cary Grant was actually tripping acid a decade before any of this hippies were. So this was kind of a weird thing, because these high-powered drugs were kind of being tested and passed around the elite circles, you could say, the A-listers and so forth, in Cary Grant's day. And then, now whether that was intentionally like an experiment, or I don't know about that. It could just been people partying or something like that. But regardless, we see that there's always been this connection between the elite. Cary Grant, I think, had elite connections. He was doing spying on the side. Jimmy Stewart did spying on the side. Errol Flynn did spying. A lot of these people did. They would inform on people. They would rat people out. All kinds of different stuff like that, because they were. It's nothing new, is what I'm trying to say. And the more that you research this stuff, the more you find out that many of these people operated in intelligence capacities that would surprise you. I mean, people in Major League Baseball have been recruited to work in intelligence. People in just all kinds of different areas and fields of life that you wouldn't expect. So we don't always know all the details, but we can get a pretty good picture. And you're right to point to like different mafias and whatnot. So what I tried to focus on in my books was just looking at the different cases to where films actually showed us stuff that was fairly or to some degree accurate in terms of history. Like, for example, if you watch Lethal Weapon, this was one that struck me that I put in part two, was that the character that Mel Gibson's playing, what's his name, like Mad Dog, or he's the crazy cop, as opposed Danny Glover being the straight cop. It actually says in the script that he was part of the Phoenix program, and the Phoenix program was the Vietnam program where they were basically trying to create crazy assassin killers. Now, we don't know all the details of that, but Douglas Valentine has written a famous book on that. But what's interesting is that, this is when the Lethal Weapon came out in like 89, somewhere in there in the 80s, 87 maybe. 86. Off the top of my head, I don't recall it. But it was in the 80s, and most people weren't aware of the Phoenix program back then. But here you have Shane Black writing the screenplay and talking about Phoenix program, and we get the impression basically that Mel Gibson's traumatized. He could trigger it at any moment and kind of go off. And if you remember, the plot of Lethal Weapon 1 is about Iran-Contra. It's about the CIA trafficking drugs and they're bringing the drugs into L.A. And that all came out later as being true if you listen to Freeway Ricky Ross and his testimony about drug trafficking and whatnot. So movies like Lethal Weapon, movies like Blow with Johnny Depp, you'll often notice there's kind of a connection between intelligence agencies, cartels, and then quite often we find out also Hollywood. One other Mel Gibson movie that everybody forgets I'll mention too is that Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr. were in Air America. And Air America is about CIA drug trafficking.
Are you at a crossroads in life with unanswered questions? How does your past connect to your present life? October Hallam can help you discover how your past connects to your present and is shaping your future. October is an intuitive, healer, empath, and medium with over 20 years of experience helping people navigate through some of life's greatest challenges. A recent client from Egypt says, "October is pure magic. We keep coming back for more," and recommended her to our closest friends. If you would like to book a session with October, please contact her at theancientgift222@gmail.com.
Yeah, exactly. Now, another thing is probably one of the best mainstream examples that everybody probably knows about is Julia Child's involvement in intelligence. And now we have kind of, it seems like modern days, there are clues that maybe Ben Affleck and George Clooney may have ties with the CIA. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that was kind of where I started really tumbling down the rabbit hole when I first started noticing these kinds of things. I remember back when that movie Salt came out with Angelina Jolie, I saw a little clip that was talking about how she had received CIA training for her role. And then I remember around the same time she joined the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, and she was seen doing all this sort of jetting around doing this all globalist type stuff. And it's like, why is this, Hollywood chick suddenly involved in all this geopolitical promotions of all kinds of different stuff? And she's reading she was shown with books at the head of the CFR. And it's like, what is going on here? And then you start to realize that, well, this is not just Angelina Jolie. Like you said, goes back to people like Julia Child, who, kind of pioneered cooking shows, cooking TV shows, she was in the OSS. And again, like I said, a lot of these A-list people, not everybody, but a lot of these A-list people did and do have CIA connections and training. And part of that is just because they're running in elite, wealthy circles. All right. So if you're an intelligence agency, you want to watch and keep track on movers and shakers, right? Because they have a lot of power, a lot of influence. So you're watching, you're in the circles of the corporate elite, the CEOs, the billionaires, right? It's a big part of it, and actors as well. But sometimes actors are also recruited. That there's a long history of that. So I'm not saying that I know, again, for certain in all those cases, but we do seem to see patterns that suggest that. And I think that the people you've listed are good contenders for all that, obviously, especially a lot of the WikiLeaks that came out and talked about George Clooney's stuff. And then there was, in the case of Jennifer Garner, she actually openly was just doing PR work for the CIA. So there's many, many cases of this. And so once you realize that it's not really a bunch of spying in the sense of what most people think of being surveillance and black operations, it's more so, like we said, culture creation. I mean, there is an element of spying and surveillance, but a lot of what we're talking about is culture creation. It's being on the inner circles of things and doing what you're told to do for an overall agenda.
And you had briefly mentioned about the mob involvement, and you did a great analysis on the Godfather trilogy, how it basically tells us how the world is working, you know, once you advance through the series. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's chapter two in the new book, and I kind of expanded on that and got into how the Godfather tells us these different aspects of the way the world works from, you know, in Godfather 1 is kind of localized. He's trying to come up in the world. By the time of Godfather 2, the family is extending to other areas in the U.S., namely to Vegas. Everybody knows Vegas is connected to the mafia. And then in Part 3, he goes global. So Part 3 is Michael Corleone taking his operation global. And he starts to interact with the papacy. You know, he needs the Pope's approval for different things. And so I talked a lot about Vatican Bank scandal. I talked about the P2 Mafia, Operation Gladio, all that kind of stuff being all tied in together. Because that actually comes up, if you're not aware, in Godfather 3. Now, most people don't think that it's the best movie of the Godfather trilogy. And, I mean, it's not. But it's, in many ways, the most revelatory for geopolitics because it talks about these operations that we're talking about, these kind of P2 Lodge being involved in Gladio, Operation Gladio, which is the stay behind units during the Cold War in Europe. That's all, that all comes up and it's mentioned in the screenplay. So that kind of prompted me to do more background research into the Godfather trilogy. And I dug up all kinds of really fascinating things about how, I think I put that on the end of chapter two where, yeah, it goes into kind of that the decision to put Al Pacino as Godfather, the mafia had to actually approve that. They actually, so then what I connected that to was kind of the way that David Lynch shows us in Mulholland Drive, kind of these kind of creepy mob figures, and also in Lost Highway, kind of making the decision on who gets what roles in what movies. And I found, you know, a real world example of that in the case of the Godfather. I'm trying to look and see who it was. It's in the book, Super Mob by Gus Russo, where they cover this whole chapter on having to get permission from the mafia to put Al Pacino in that role. So yeah. That's just one example of many.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things going on right now that are pretty fascinating to me. Basically, the exposing of the sex cults right now and, you know, the arrest of Epstein. So I'd just like to know what your thoughts on the overall scheme of things, what's going on right now, you know?
Well, both books, you'll notice, feature Kubrick. That's Kubrick making the triangle eye, scouting for film locations, and that's Eyes Wide Shut, right, on the cover of Part 1. And so, you know, it's just really wild to me that, because I wrote Esther Hollywood 1 over many years, and you know, just kind of pick the movies that I thought were important, and sex cults in Hollywood comes up quite a bit. And so the book begins with esoteric occult aspects of Hollywood. And the first movie that I chose is Eyes Wide Shut because it's so obvious. And, you know, I actually wrote the Eyes Wide Shut analysis about 10 years ago. I sort of souped it up and tweaked it and fixed it when I published Esoteric Hollywood 1 in 2016. But even in 2016, people thought it was crazy to talk about this stuff. It was still unheard of. But what was odd to me was that there was all kinds of cases that had already come out. I mean, there was all these books that had already dealt with it. Maybe not in the way that I talk about it in terms of film symbolism, but there's plenty of books that had, like from a journalistic standpoint, that had dealt with it, like Deborah Jean Palfrey, her book that talked about she was the DC madam. And she talked about how, you know, blackmail operated in DC. Well, it's not any different anywhere else. It's not going to be different in Hollywood. The blackmail operates the exact same way. So, I heard about Epstein around 2016, but I didn't put it in the book because most of the book was already written. But that was around the time that Epstein was first kind of making international waves because he had been convicted around that time in relationship to the Prince Andrew situation. So there was some media coverage of that, as well as other elite kind of weird creeper type stuff. Savile had come out. Penn State had come out. Everybody probably knows about, you know, Boys Town and the VIP sex ring with the GOP from a long time ago. Franklin cover-up type stuff, right? So there was plenty of cases of this if people had been watching it in the news. And I had followed the Roman Catholic abuse scandals and read several books on that, 5 or 6 books 10 years ago on that. So I already had an idea of how prevalent this was. And I don't really cover those kinds of cases. What I cover is the way that films present it. So I'm not like a journalist. I don't present myself. I'm not a journalist. I write books that do.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Film analysis and culture analysis. That's what I do. I don't do journalism. So that's what this book is. And I think a lot of people are kind of surprised. Like if they're expecting some kind of expose on who Britney Spears is sleeping with. That's not the kind of stuff that I do. It's like I'm going to talk about, you know, what's the symbolic aspects of why Kubrick chose, you know, this scene, why he's got this in the background, why he's got, you know, the cult chanting this, why they're doing this in this scene. Let me show you some elite parties that have come out where they're all wearing this Eyes Wide Shut garb. You know, all this kind of stuff is what I talk about. And, you know, it's just crazy to me that the NXIVM cult, that ties in a lot of Hollywood people. The Epstein thing ties in a lot of the elites. And it really confirms all the stuff that I wrote about.
It definitely does. And just your thoughts, do you think that this trend is going to continue of exposing things like this in the future?
That's a good question. You know, I wouldn't have expected any of this stuff coming out. So I'm kind of surprised that it has come out. I mean, they will try to control those releases usually when this kind of stuff comes out. And they'll try to steer it into something like when that Weinstein stuff was coming out. Remember that? That was also... Yeah. Similar in the vein of Hollywood, and they tried to steer that into, oh, this is feminism, right? And so Epstein, you know, whatever happened to him, he didn't last too long. So you know, they, I guess they have ways of dealing with all this stuff, but what more do we need once we know that all this stuff is real, right? I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be exposed. I'm just saying that, you know, like, how much more do you need to know that it's real, you know? So, but I don't know how much more will keep coming out. That it'll be interesting to see. I think they're kind of racing to debase the culture so that when this stuff comes out, it'll be like not even a big deal because everybody's so degenerate by that or something. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're trying to do.
Now, when it comes to the overall power pyramid of who's in control of all this, how do you think that goes? Do you think it's, you know, the bankers at one of the top levels? And I always wonder how much power the Vatican actually has. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that all of those structures ultimately tie into, you could say, a pyramid. I don't know if they're always perfectly in line, but I don't have a problem using the pyramid analogy. I think it's
probably different factions involved.
Yeah, I mean, Rothkopf had a book where he talked about the 6,000 or so people who manage the world. So this would be the people, the top 6,000 CEOs, corporate people, people in NGOs, pharmaceutical companies, the controlling interests in the various private Federal Reserve banks, the controlling stocks in the biggest corporations. That's who runs the world. It's not specifically one racial or ethnic group. it's all these different groups, and they're all united in the agenda to essentially create a single technocratic global government. I believe that ultimately it's a battle that's spiritual in nature. I'm not going to say that I know for sure we're in the end times or anything like that. I wouldn't hazard to say that I know that for sure, but it's definitely a, you could call it a beast type of system if you wanted to, because it's very predatory. It's beast-like for sure in terms of its spirit. And it's preys on the weak, certainly. And ultimately, the philosophy is Luciferian. That's really what it's about.
And, you know, we know these secret societies, they're using doctrines that are thousands of years old. Do you think that they are actually still possibly in communication with entities, maybe otherworldly entities, demonic, archonic, whatever you want to call them? Do you think that there's still some kind of communication going on there?
Yes, and that's why I think a lot of the elements of the elite enjoy hallucinogens for that very reason, because that's the quickest way to, you know, have that kind of an interaction. And so that's why they have promoted shamanism. And I'm reading right now, for example, Terrence McKenna, not because I agree with Terrence McKenna, but I'm doing an analysis of his book, because just like Timothy Leary, he was kind of promoting all the same stuff Leary was. And they're pretty open about, like, within the first chapter of McKenna's book, he says basically the same stuff that Timothy Leary says, which is just that the hallucinogens are going to basically initiate everybody into a new Luciferian age. Now, McKenna doesn't say the word Luciferian, but it's all the same stuff that the Luciferians say. So when we look at Burning Man, for example, we've been talking about this a lot on Boiler Room, the podcast we do. And Aaron and Melissa Dykes have come on to talk about this, because they're going to be doing, I think, some analysis of Burning Man. But Burning Man has all the top tech people that go there. And I didn't even know this, but there's like an inner secret society of tech people that go to Burning Man, and you know, they do hallucinogens and whatever they do. And so they believe that they are interacting with those kinds of things. I mean, I've done hallucinogens, so I know that you do experience that kind of stuff. It's not all made up. I do think that it's ultimately a deception. I think that the entities that are communicating are not entities that are pro-human. They actually have a pretty consistent message of, oh, you need to kill everybody and create a world government. Just do a search of people's DMT trip videos. Everybody who does DMT stories on YouTube, they all say the same thing. Well, I talked to the elves, and the elves told me that it's time to depopulate and create a world government, and that's the only way that we're going to survive the ecological catastrophes, man. They all say the same thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, that, you know, anytime of there have someone channeling something, it always comes back with a message of the world needs to unify under, right, you know, one leadership system. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah, they don't ever say, like, learn the logical fallacies, right? Like, they don't ever tell you basic logic. They don't ever say anything like that. It's always the same, you know, we're here to make sure that everybody melds into a giant blob, the blob, right? It's like they're emissaries of the blob. And, you know, get rid of all your preconceived notions and meld into the giant one. And this is interesting, because this is what Huxley says. If you read The Perennial Philosophy by Huxley, that's what he says. He says, we'll create a new global blob religion that melds all the religions into one. And this is where the Vatican comes into play, because the Vatican, I would say, has been co-opted for a long time, probably, but most clearly in the last century, to really go along with the globalist agenda. And I think a lot of people had maybe problems with that decades ago, if you were to say something like that. But the present Pope has made that, like, totally obvious. Like, every day he does a new level of like craziness, where he's talking about, let's sign an accord between all the religions. Let's create a new humanistic religion. Let's all get together and have the same. I mean, he's just going hog wild with it. So it's becoming very apparent now.
And another thing that's fascinating to me is the whole alien mania right now. I've had a lot of thoughts on this, and the more I think about it, the more I think that it's there's something more behind the alien thing. I think maybe something more spiritual. I start to think of the Greys as just maybe some kind of biological robots that are probably under control of something else, something maybe interdimensional, something different. And I look at the whole UFO thing a lot different than I used to.
Yeah, I like that documentary Mirage Men because it shows on the level of deception the degree to which military intelligence has utilized the alien phenomena to dupe people. So if you've not seen that documentary, it's really good. I would say it's kind of a counter to that documentary of Bob Lazar, which I thought was kind of silly. So if you watch those two documentaries and compare the two, you'll notice that what Mirage Men presents is people who work in military intelligence talking about how they pick people in the UFO community to give disinformation to. And a lot of times the people could be sincere. They really think that they're going to, you know, find out what's underground at Area 51 or whatever. And they don't have enough critical faculties maybe to question, you know, when some general tells them something, right? Generals and military, they lie. That's what intelligence agencies do, is lie. They're trained to lie. That's their job. So the first thing we should be, the attitude we should have is anytime some general comes out talking about underground bases is skepticism, right? We should be dubious of this guy because they're trained to lie. But and all that's kind of dealt with pretty extensively in Mirage Men, which is on Vimeo, by the way. You can find the documentary free on Vimeo. But that's just at the level of kind of like social engineering and whatnot. But I believe that, yeah, it's kind of the same thing as what you see with the all the DMT trip reports that people do. They all talk about talking to the machine elves. And then a lot of people who've had LSD, hallucinogen type experiences, this matches up to a lot of religious type ceremony experiences of talking to these entities and whatnot. And I think it's all the same thing. I think that it's all describing the same phenomenon. Not in every case. I mean, some people could be just hallucinating and thinking that they're doing it, but in many cases, I think that it's all the same spiritual phenomenon, excluding the cases of deception or when people are lying. Obviously, that does go on too. For example, in Mirage Men, they talk about in one case, the Air Force filmed a drone taken off, like kind of a direct up, I don't know what that's called, but vertical drone. It just kind of goes straight up. And they had a bunch of lights set up around it. And this was to tell one of the marks that they had, that they were feeding the disinfo to, that this was a UFO craft taking off of one of the military bases. And all it was a drone that they set up, and they just added in some special effects, right? And actually, it was a Hollywood guy who was helping them out to film that. But the dupe, the alien researcher person, I don't remember who it was, but they just believed it because, oh, well, a general came in and he put a VHS in the machine, and we watched this alien craft take it, and it was all fake. But that guy accepted it. So excluding the cases where that's happened, I would say that these other instances of people's experiences and phenomena, they seem to match up to religious experiences and LSD experiences, and they're very similar to a lot of people's cases of ritual abuse, mind control, MKUltra type stuff. So I actually think that there's a connection between MKUltra and the UFO stuff.
And I mean, I've come to realize that a lot of UFO stuff is just us. It's the military, you know, reverse engineering or doing whatever they do with this technology. And it's not even, you know, what they say it is.
Right.
What do you think is going on with this closure right now? I mean, right now we've got this Area 51 nonsense going on. What do you think the agenda is here?
My view is that they're really just ramping up and trying to regurgitate and reinvigorate the alien mythos. I've always thought that the alien stuff is multi-tiered, multi-layered. There's a lot of intelligence deception stuff. There's a lot of mind control and ultra related stuff and testing out what you can get people to believe and not believe. There's an interview, and I forget, one of the people in Mirage Men actually talks about this too, where he says something like, if you think about the MJ-12 documents, he says, consider this aspect of it that most people don't think about. He says, think about it more so as are we able to get people to think about aliens rather than thinking about, does this prove or disprove aliens? And that's come up in a lot of the books I've read about the alien stuff. There's a good book by an academic, Brenda Densler, and I cited her in my Esoteric Hollywood 2, and she talks about not so much whether there is or isn't aliens or entities, but how does it function in social engineering? So I think that's a big point to understand, is that I think the system is really interested in moving people's perceptions away from traditional religious concepts. This is why there was a Brookings Institute paper from the 1960s that I cite that actually talks about how disruptive to religious views it would be to have disclosure. So it's very useful for worldview warfare, info war, Weltanschauungskrieg, which is the German for worldview warfare. So I think that's the best thing to understand first and foremost. And a lot of the people in, I'm not speaking of you, just in general in the UFO realm of things, they don't think about it like that. That's the way I've approached it typically. But I also differ from other people where I don't think that everything is military intelligence and deception. I also think there's a spiritual interdimensional component to this stuff. It's all of those things. And I think Jacques Vallée says that too. Like, I'm not the only person, like, I'm not saying I agree with everything Jacques Vallée says, but he's one of the, you know, UFO people who says all of these layers to it are part of it.
And I've heard some researchers say that a part of it is also an excuse for them to roll out the new technology that they've been hiding, you know, their new toys and stuff. They also do that with movies, right?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of the spy gadgets that we've seen over the years, and the stuff that we see in Star Trek, you know, you've got intelligence agencies and you've got the RAND Corporation consulting on Star Trek. The whole bridge of the Enterprise, the automatic doors, the, you know, handheld communicators, this, right? That was all kind of discussed on set and consulted for Star Trek by the RAND Corporation. A lot of people don't know that, but that's, I cited that in the book too. And, the spy gadgets, yeah, that's all true. I was just watching, I did an analysis of The Saint, which is that 1997 Val Kilmer movie. I'm a big fan of that movie. And I have watched it all these years, and I didn't even think about the fact that it was way ahead of its time. It's dated now, but there's a scene where Val has this Nokia cell phone, and it has, it was a flip phone, but it has all this kind of, like, it was a little computer. And it even had like a QWERTY keyboard and all this stuff. And nobody had seen that in 1997. So I was reading some of the history on the movie, and they were talking about how, like, this was a special Nokia model that they allowed to be in the movie because it was like years ahead of the time or something like that. So that's just one example, but we've actually seen many, many cases of this in terms of, especially the Bond films or even Mission Impossible. I think that, the Mission Impossible 4 or 5, the one where Tom Cruise has those gloves where he's like climbing up the glass building in Dubai or wherever. Those are real DARPA gloves. So that's another, you know, all of these kinds of things we've seen, you know, people with retinal, you know, cameras in their contact lenses, this kind of stuff, all that kind of stuff, I think is eventually going to be rolled out. And usually you can tell in the science fiction novels what's going to be 15, 20 years down the road.
Do you think the superhero craze is also having to do with the transhumanism agenda?
It is, and I wasn't really convinced of that until the which Avengers? One of the Avengers movie. The one with the Vision, remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vision is really what, because I realized what he represents is, like, he's a form of resurrection. And I heard, I don't agree with everything that Fritz says, but Fritz has some, he was ahead of his time in a lot of his analysis. And he had a talk that he did on cloning. And one of the points he made in that has stuck with me that I think he's probably right about is that from the vantage point of AI and cloning and transhumanism, they see like the religious view of resurrection, the Christian doctrine of resurrection, or I guess other monotheistic religions also have resurrection too. They see that as like, as a real thing, but it's standing for technology. It's not a miracle that a deity will do. It's an encoded kind of secret of nature that if you discover the tech right, you can basically build a new body to be immortal. And that's kind of what Vision represented, because he gets, doesn't he die and come back in the movie? Yeah. So I started realizing that there's this resurrection motif for him. And then I think other installments of the Avengers hinted at that pretty clearly as well. But the Avengers series, I think, was really about transhumanism. And of course, the character Iron Man. Iron Man is a, you know, another example of transhumanism for sure.
Now, I know you write about geoengineering. How does that tie into all this?
That's a good question. So I did a chapter, in the second book on how Hollywood has presented terraforming and geoengineering, which are real. So these projects are way more advanced than most people think. I'm not claiming to know everything about geoengineering, but I did research that chapter pretty in depth. Once again, we have like the Bond series. We have sometimes weird movies that we wouldn't expect. Going back to Frank Herbert's novel Dune, you have a lot of geoengineering and weather modification in Dune. So I covered the David Lynch version of Dune. And then I went into a lot of the research that was done on ELF and VLF. So the way that geoengineering ties into this is that just like with transhumanism, where you're trying to modify the man to create the new man, the new immortal man, from the perspective of the elite, it's also about modifying man's environment. It's not just man, but also man's environment. So it's kind of an attempt to rewrite the whole biosphere, right? So they want to alter and change and be able to essentially control not just man, but also man's environment. And that would include plant life. That would include, you know, life in general. So the weather ecosystems, weather patterns, that's part of life. So naturally, they would also want to commandeer and control the weather, because ultimately it's kind of about achieving kind of sort of godlike status over all areas of things.
I also think they're changing us on a genetic level through our food as well.
GMOs, that's a big part of it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an overall perspective is, I think, what most people don't think, that they don't think these things are connected, or that it's a unified approach and program. And I can see why people don't think that, because a lot of people don't read the top globalists. They'll read the news or whatever. And the news keeps you intentionally compartmentalized and disconnected. Like, you're not supposed to make connections between different areas when you're a normie that reads the news. But if you are reading the top global elite, which, for example, I did a lecture series called the Globalism Book Series, where I've gone through over 30 of the top global elite's books in the last 2 years, 3 years, then you get a picture of how grand the scope and scale of the plans are. They're not just plans about, you know, Freemasons taking over religion. Like, it's a global plan for all areas of life. And that's what a lot of people can't fathom. They can't fathom people thinking like this. And this is, once again, it's ironic, because it's almost like we're back on a Bond novel where we have like Blofeld, you know, who wants to take over the world.
Now, if you take a step back and you look at everything happening today, our reality is stranger than fiction. I mean, you look at Trump, you look at the things that happened with the last election, the things that are going on socially, you know, how backwards everything has become. One thing that I've always thought is I've never trusted any politician. I think that they're both sides are puppets for the elite. I'd like to know what you think is going on with Trump. Do you think that he's actually what people think he is, what the Q crowd says he is? Or do you think he's just another puppet like the rest of them?
Honestly, I don't really have an opinion on Trump. I've become less and less interested in politics over the years. 10 years ago, I was pretty politically active. I was really into like the Ron Paul and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that it's totally pointless to be involved in maybe local politics could do something, but on a national level, it just really seems like a dog and pony show and a big waste of time and effort and energy, and people get mad over it, and it's not even worth much time in my view. So, I mean, I will watch the news and see what's happening, and I'll keep up with some aspects of it. And I think Trump has done some good things, and he's done some goofy, fumbled up, stupid things. So, yeah, I don't really follow the political realm anymore. What's more, much more interesting to me is the bigger question issues of where are the global elite taking us in the next 20, 30, 40 years? Because it doesn't matter what presidents come, the presidents come and go, but the agenda marches on, and that's the big thing that nobody understands. And I think that they really like you getting caught up in, you know, the drama of what porn star slept with who, or, you know, all this nonsense. And the technocratic agenda, for example, just marches on.
Right? So yeah, I think it's they're just trying to divide people with politics in general. It's all about, you know, control and division.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can honestly say that I kind of tuned out of politics like the last 2 years. I don't even really pay. I mean, other than like when I see it in the news or something that, you know, kind of track like the big stories or something here and there. But like 10 years ago, I would be following like 30 news sites a day, you know, really like just scanning tons and tons. I don't do that anymore. I don't give a shit about that anymore. I don't even follow any news feeds. But I, because I do have a, you know, mediocre little following, I do have quite a few people that will send me articles every day. So I kind of have 50 to 100 core people that send me key articles and essays and this kind of stuff. So I'll keep up with whatever that stuff touches on politics, but I don't follow politics anymore. Now, I'll talk about it. I don't mind talking about it, but what I really want to stress is that people need to understand the big picture.
How far do you think this new censorship trend is going to go? I mean, I've already been heavily affected by it. I'm sure you have too. Yeah. Do you think they're just going to shut down all alternative media sources?
They're definitely going to try. I don't know how far they'll get or what kind of ways people will come up with, maybe creative ways to kind of circumvent that in the meantime or kick the can down the road. Maybe I'm not sure, but I'm afraid that they want to take a lot of the public kind of stuff and channel it into Netflix type paid streaming sites. And I'm guessing, speculating, they probably are just going to have a few chosen, say, channels. Like maybe you get the top 500 channels that get check marks, and they're allowed to stay on and put out information. And everybody else just kind of gets squeezed out and demonetized. That's probably what they'll do. But I think that the plan has been for a long time. When we started seeing the social media come about, that's what this was about. Social media was preparing us for getting everybody onto centralized platforms so that the information could be controlled and channeled. And ultimately, I think what they'll try to do is have access points to where nobody has websites or gets access apart from some kind of approval. I don't know how they'll do that exactly, but they're going to definitely try to do that. And ultimately, the bad news is that they want to have this kind of credit score system where you don't get a website, you don't get your credits, you don't get anything like that unless you're a good little boy. And if you do what the system says, you don't say bad words, you don't do this or that, you get your credits. That's part of why the technocrats want a universal basic income. If they have you on a universal basic income, then they can control you through, it's basically just being on globalist welfare, and they'll shut off your welfare if you don't do what they say.
Well, Jay, I want to thank you so much for joining us. That was fantastic information. What about you? Do you have anything interesting coming up? You're working on anything new?
Really what I've done is just kind of transition into consistently doing talks on philosophy, on theology, religion, symbolism in film. And I've kind of restructured the way I do the film analysis now to where I do a live stream where I do about 3 or 4 movies with a similar theme. So, for example, the last one I did was Val Kilmer movies. So we picked 4 or 5 Val Kilmer movies that were interesting. You know, we did Willow, we did The Saint, we did Spartan, Batman Forever, because there's some really weird stuff in Batman Forever. I did a Conan the Barbarian stream before that. So I did an Alien Demon Overlord stream about alien movies before that. So that's, I think, what I'm going to keep doing with the film analysis, is doing it that way. And then I'll just keep doing the, you know, philosophy and religious talks and debates like I've been doing. So that's what's coming up for me. And if anybody wants, you can get signed copies of the books in the shop at my website. And please get them from me and not Amazon. So that's all that's coming up for me.
Very good. Well, thanks again so much for joining us, and we'll have to have you back on in the future.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.